And now I think we have a little surprise in the program today for our listeners. We've completed about 3 years of the Symphony Scrapbook being on the air every week. And I thought it might be of interest to look at the whole program from a new point of view. And I've asked Mr. Bert Whaley, producer of your Symphony Scrapbook, if he'd join me on the program today. To look back over the experiences we've had together in putting this program on the air, see what his point of view is. Bert, you usually sit in the control room at my back, and I can't see what your reactions are. I was wondering, from your point of view as producer of the show, what you have thought about it. Now, I'm not searching for compliments now. I'd like some frank comments as we look back.
Well, George, actually, I suppose an awful lot of artists, and I know quite a few from personal experience, have a feeling that the engineer and the producer are sitting in the control room telling funny stories while they're doing their stint.
That's not the reason I turned my back on you,
huh? No. However, that may be true in some cases, but it's not true in the case of this show. We listen to it very carefully. And frankly, I'm happy to have this opportunity to express the appreciation I feel in being connected with this program. From a point of personal satisfaction, as well as from the point of view that I feel that I'm connected with something that really is promotional as far as culture is concerned, because we get down to basic facts on this program about music, and after all, that is one of the great loves of my life, is music.
Yes, I think we've mentioned on this program several times that this program is absolutely unrehearsed. It's absolutely informal, and we've attempted to introduce people to the, as we've said week after week, to the men and women who make music at Orchestra Hall, in order that people might come to know these individuals personally. Do you think we've accomplished that aim?
Well, I think definitely we do. It's a wonderful thing to see the musicians come out as their personalities, come out as individual personalities. When you sit in Orchestra Hall and watch them play, you think that they're all, well, I don't know the word for it, mannequins.
Sort of
bowing,
you know, automatons.
Automatons, that's the word I wanted. Yeah. You're the English professor. You should know about those things. But each individual musician does have a very definite personality. Some of them, on the most part, generally speaking, we are able to create an atmosphere of informality here, which helps them to relax, and they don't get mic fright, and we're really able to present each personality or a fragment of it as is.
I think I've been trying to accomplish one thing among others in this series of programs. Too oftentimes, I think a program of this type falls flat on its face because it attempts to be too didactic. And because its attempts to be educational. I'm very happy in a number of the letters that we've received week by week that point out that there is some educational value in it. But it's all been done in a rather pleasant, informal, rather indirect way.
Would you do something for me, please, George? That word, didactic.
We haven't tried to teach people or educate them as to the value of the different instruments or the tone in a schoolmasterous way. We've tried to present it in a rather, let's say, pleasant. We've used the word informal over and over again, but I think that's the best word. Informal, unrehearsed atmosphere, so that any information people pick up comes indirectly, not directly. It hasn't been a blackboard instruction saying, now you must watch for this, you must watch for that.
Yes, as a matter of fact, we sometimes rather conspire against the musicians who bring in something that they want to read and contrive in some manner to put the music stand with that information on it so they can't get to it and they have to ad lib. So it's. And we also sometimes tell a good story before we go on the air.
To make everybody relaxed.
I think, generally speaking, I think that the spontaneity is a characteristic of the interviews, particularly because of the way in which you ask questions.
Well, I sometimes have felt that I'd like to ask our listeners to send in more suggestions for the program, and we receive so many complimentary letters and not very many suggestions, and in moments of pride, perhaps, I jump to the conclusion that's because we accomplish what we set out to so successfully that people have any suggestions to make.
That brings me to something, George. I'd like to ask a question, and let's see what happens with this. We've often discussed the possibility of putting this program on television. Let's find out what the public response to that suggestion is. Let's see if we can get some mail on it.
Well, that's a very interesting question. And I should say parenthetically that that was absolutely unrehearsed. You're throwing something at me unexpectedly. I should think it'd be a, what's the word you use, a natural for television. I frequently felt as I've sat here watching the instrumentalists play that I wish I could describe to our listeners just what is happening, wishing that they could actually see the player use the instrument. I think it might add a great deal of value. Okay, that's a solicitation for correspondence, and I hope we have some.
That's what we hear call a mail pull.
Now you're educating me in a
word. Well, I would like to ask you a question or two, George. How is it that you became a manager of symphony orchestras after having been a professor of English in a university?
Well, in my...
Or is that an unfair question?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer because there's so many ramifications to the answer. I'd say principally that as far back as I can remember, literature and music were my two main loves. And having first had some experience in teaching, I got into the field of management, the Boston Symphony, largely through a friend of mine who happened to be assistant manager and who, I started to say inveigle, but that's not quite the right word, who encouraged me to try that. Having tried it for several years, the pull of teaching was so great that I left the field of management, went back to teaching English literature, English and American literature, and with specialties in Shakespeare. And then, ultimately, after I felt that I had done my stint in the teaching field, the field of education, as such, the other pull, the pull of music, came back stronger than ever. And so I went back to the Boston Symphony Management, and from there came to Chicago.
How long were you at Boston?
First for 2 years, and then for 4 years before coming here.
And you've been here how long?
Just about 9 years.
Well, that's really a satisfactory thing, I should think, to be able to work with both of your professions in that way.
Well, they're very closely allied, I think.
Yes, I do, too.
Although... sometimes it's very easy, I think, for a manager of an orchestra to long for the sheltered and quiet cloisters of educational campus life when things become particularly hectic in a manager's office.
Yes.
But, I feel that the job is
full of
very interesting challenges.
I can remember a couple of instances when I can think that you might have felt that way.
Especially when... such a thing as a tour of the orchestra comes up. I might say by the time this is on the air, We will be just about completing our tour. We'll be about halfway through a tour of the East. And, of course, touring, as I mentioned once on a previous program, is a combination of a number of, might I say, headaches in getting 110 people from city to city, railroad accommodations and hotel accommodations, transportation of all the instruments, making sure that the our baggage arrives a little before the players do so that the stage can be set up. Remember on one very interesting occasion, about 5 or 6 years ago, we were playing in the city, planned for a Sunday afternoon concert, planned to get there about 1 o'clock for a 3 o'clock concert. We had the baggage car along with us on our train. We were allowing plenty of time to unload the baggage and get it to the high school where we were playing. The engine broke down, and we arrived at the auditorium with our baggage and the players about 1.5 hours after we were due. So we gave the audience a very interesting experience of watching an orchestra concert being put together, with the chairs and music stands being put out and the instruments gradually being brought in and tuned up. I imagine that audience still remembers that unique experience that they had.
Well, I've often wondered about that. Do you travel in a private car?
Well, we usually, on this tour, we'll be traveling entirely by day coach, because the jumps are not very long, and also partly because of a matter of expense. The railroads have been very considerate and usually give us at least two cars, one of which we call the hospital car. That's for non-smokers. And the other car is the smoking car.
I once toured with a dance band. We just had a bus, and we got everything, including the drums and the bowl fiddle and everything else in a bus. And we got lost lots of times, too.
Well, we have, you see, a whole set of timpani and bass drum on this trip. We'll have a set of chimes, all the percussion instruments. We'll have 9 double basses, about 10 cellos, various wardrobe trunks holding evening clothes for the players, cases for violins and violas. There are about 80 pieces of baggage that we carry along with us.
Well, you can't put those in the same...
We can't get those in a bus, no.
The hospital car, either.
And we can't expect a double player, a bass player, to take it along in the coach with him, either.
Once our bus broke down and the bass player had to take his on a Greyhound bus, that was really amusing. Well, George, we usually have an anecdote, at the end of this. I wonder if you've got one today.
Yes, I have an interesting anecdote, Bert, which comes from Mrs. Charles A. Keller of Wilmette, and I think it has a delightful little touch. So I have a little incident to report which might possibly be of interest to your listeners. Last month, my 11-year-old daughter accompanied me to a concert by Sino Francescatti in the Evanston High School gym. We sat in the balcony, and after one of the numbers, she leaned toward me and confided, "I always like to watch the people clap. Their hands look like butterflies fluttering about." And so we want to send a pair of tickets to Mrs. Culler for her interesting anecdote.